Tale of Two Elections in Jacobin at jacobinmag.com. Keane Bott, thank you very much for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thank you so much, Janine.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by the staff and interns at FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. If you'd like more information about FAIR, you can check out our website. It's fair.org. The website is also the place to join our Action Alert Network or to show support for FAIR if you are so inclined. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thank you for listening to Counterspin. Good evening. You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time now is 6 p.m. Up next, Bread and Roses, followed by with our host Nia. Anyway, here is a message from KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Clinton Street Stomp, an evening of unamplified performances by some of the region's root music acts, playing the third Saturday of each month, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. This month, the December 19th show features Crow Quill Night Owls, Caleb Plotter and Reeb Wilms, and Miller and Saucer, and hosted by country blues yodeler Zach Bryson. Again, that's the Clinton Street Stomp, Saturday, December 19th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Bread and Roses is brought to you. This program has been made possible by a Pardon KBOO Foundation members and a grant from People's Food Co-op, a community-owned, values-driven cooperative striving to provide access to whole foods customers can trust. People's features farm-direct organic produce, bulk foods, a weekly year-round farmers market, and everyone is welcome. Located on 21st and Tibbetts Street between Division and Powell. More info at peoples.coop. This program is also brought to you by Oregon Symphony, presenting an evening with indie folk troubadour Gary Allen Isakoff, Thursday, January 14th at the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall. Tickets and information for Gregory Allen Isakoff with the Oregon Symphony are available at orsymphony.org.
Marching at the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses. Marching, so many women dead. We cry through our city, their ancient call for bread. Our stomachs are empty, but our hearts are hungry too. Oh, hear the people singing bread.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, Feminist News and Public Affairs. I'm Nia Nguyen, and I have my co-host with me,
Desara Dudley.
And our engineer tonight is Ebony Z. Bread and Roses is a collective of women-identified radio activists. We give voice to those working for social justice and equity globally, locally, and we strive to challenge systems of oppression. All this, and we have fun. We always welcome new collective members, no experience necessary. To find out about how you can host, produce, or engineer with us, you can contact KBOO's volunteer coordinator at volunteer.kboo.org. Again, that's volunteer@kboo.org. Make sure to like KBOO Bread and Roses on Facebook to get updates and see behind the scene photos. We are also on Twitter at Bread Roses Radio and on the web at www.kboo.fm/Bread and Roses. There, you can listen to past shows and leave us comments and show ideas. You can also email us at suggestions at breadandrosescollective@gmail.com. Tonight, the show focuses on heteronormativity, transnormativity, and the insidious pressures of transmisogyny and this myth of the woman. And when I'm speaking about this myth of the woman, I'm trying to dig a little deep into what it means to be a woman, especially in the case of a comment that Caitlyn Jenner just made. And I'm just going to set this up by saying that I am a trans woman of color myself, and I do not... I do not find Caitlyn Jenner to be a heroic person or even someone that I can look up to because all of the things that she represents, I'm just not all about that. And I think that to be given the title of, a trans individual that is a spokesperson for us or is going to speak for us or represent us, that is, I think it's absolutely ridiculous on my end. And
yeah, and I think what's really important in discussion of Caitlyn Jenner is really to think about privilege and the role that that plays,
mm-hmm.
To recognize the reality that, unfortunately, in the trans community, Caitlyn Jenner has a wild amount of privilege and that the average trans person's experience has almost nothing to do with that.
Yeah, nowhere near. So,
it'd be nice to be fabulously wealthy, but... I'd love to be independently wealthy.
Yeah, wouldn't we all?
Yeah.
So, Caitlyn Jenner has recently been under fire for some of the things that she said in a recent Times Magazine interview that they had with her, in which I'm just going to quote Miss Caitlyn here. Which she says, one thing that has always been important for me, and it may seem very self-absorbed or whatever, is first of all, your presentation is who you are. And I think it's much easier for a trans woman or a trans man who authentically kind of looks and plays the role. So what I call my presentation, I try to take that seriously. I think it puts people at ease. If you're out there, and to be honest with you, if you look like a man in a dress, it makes people uncomfortable. So the first thing I can do is try to present myself well. I want to dress well. I want to look well. I want to go out, as Kim says, you've got to rock it because the paparazzis will be there. And Tessara, you want to fill us in on what you think about that? And
There's this conversation about passing. So passing has been this standard when talking about trans people's lives for, well, a long time, with the first surgeries that were done, with the first medical interventions. There was very much this belief that if you couldn't successfully, whatever that means, successfully present a binary gender, then you would fail. Like, you had failed as a trans person, which is a very strange and arbitrary thing to even try to say to somebody. But this still goes on. Counselors get the chance to tell people before they, authorize hormones and things like that. What they need to do in order to, be a real blank, whatever it is, right?
Well, I mean, even when it comes to the doctors that are going to give you your sex when you're born, or your gender in that case. Like, there is a specific, and I've had friends that have told me that, like, there is a specific way that, like, they look at the baby's sex, and if it's, like, off by certain degrees or centimeters or whatever, then the baby would... I don't know if they still do this. I have to do the research on that. But, like, they used to do surgeries on
babies. Still do that.
Oh, they still
Doctors
do
pressure parents into saying yes to normalizing genitalia through surgery in order to, I guess the doctors say, like, prevent the child from having any heartache or trouble later on in life. I mean...
But, you know, so yeah. that's implying that, like... how they're born is going to give them any trouble, but the fact of the matter is that trouble is coming from society. It's not coming yeah. from any, like, internal factors. It's like, I think it's very baffling and sad that, like, we equate each other on our sex organs, and, like, mm-hmm. It's pretty messed up.
For so, sure. And also a very strange arbitrary measure of gender, right? Because when you're walking down the street, you can't actually see what anyone has going on under their clothes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And if you're not yeah. having sex with them, it's probably not actually even your business.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, that sets us up to the idea of, like, heteronormativity, mm-hmm. which for our viewers out there that are listening that don't know what heteronormativity, do you want to say what it is? I can. So heteronormativity is this idea that, like, to be normal, you have to be heterosexual mm-hmm. in the system, and you to be normal in the society, you have to be heterosexual. You gotta, you know, pop them babies and get married,
which has gender implications as well.
Absolutely,
because, when you're defining people's gender, so a heterosexual relationship would be one between a man and a woman. So what does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to be a woman? We have these very rigid gender roles that actually most people don't fall into.
But a lot of people try to, though.
Yeah, and it's hard, right? And that's the heartache. Yeah. We're like, we're not inside, we're not feeling all the heartache. It's the sort of outside world that puts us in danger.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's just try to finish off with Caitlyn Jenner. Because, like, I think we've given her enough time. But mm-hmm. she issued an apology, if you want to read some of that.
Sure. Yeah. So Caitlyn Jenner wrote this.
It's the article from the Huffington Post.
HuffPo.
Yeah.
Good old HuffPo. And she said, in the first scene of the first episode, I'm Kate. I was up at 4:30 in the morning wearing I Hope I Get It Right. Since I told the world my truth 6 months ago, I've tried to be a force for good. I've met and listened to many people in the transgender community, from trans women of color to the parents of trans kids who've taken their own lives, to people working in the courts and legislatures and media to make the world a better, safer place for trans people. I've spent a lot of time listening to people tell me their stories. Even now, at the end of this whirlwind year, I still feel like I have so much to learn. I guess it's true that there are some things that I've not gotten right. Sometimes this is because I'm still finding out about the issues. Sometimes this is because something that's true for me isn't true for other people in our community. And sometimes I've said things that just come out the wrong way. And sometimes the media takes one comment out of context or interprets it to mean something other than what I meant. We're starting to get into non-apology territory. This week, a lot of attention was brought to my comments in my Time interview, in which I said that my appearance is important to me. I think I caused a lot of hurt with this comment, and I'm truly sorry. She says, what I was trying to say is that our world really is still a binary one, and that people who look visibly transgender, in quotes, sometimes can struggle for acceptance and may be treated poorly by others. And while this may be true, it's also something that needs to change.
Visibly transgender.
Yeah. Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Do you want me to continue?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's pages. It's...
Sorry. There.
Anyway,
Some people look some people look gender nonconforming because they want to look that way. They don't want to conform to society's expectations. Those people have every right to look and present exactly as they choose. And then there are other people who don't have the resources to access the medical procedures that would help them look the way that they want to look. Procedures, incidentally, that most health insurance plans refuses to cover. All of these people are my brothers and sisters, and I'm fighting alongside them too. My comment probably made it seem like all I care about is fashion or makeup or appearance. I can tell you I really enjoyed all that. It's who I am. It's the world I come from. And as a person in the media, I have certain expectations for myself, but I am only one person. There are a lot of ways of being trans, and I want to help create a world in which people are able to express their gender in any way that is true and authentic for them. And most importantly, a world in which how a trans person is treated isn't dependent on how they look. I'm guessing that this is probably not the last time I will say the wrong thing or something the wrong way. I promise to keep learning and to try to be more articulate in the future. So, it feels to me that like that apology is not like really an apology, but it was like somebody wrote it for her, because it's like she definitely calls out all of the privileges that, like, you know, like she says, like, okay, well, you know, like when a person mm-hmm. can want to look like they're like they pass,
yeah,
they can get medical procedures, in which she can totally do that,
yeah.
And I don't believe it, you know?
Well, and so even in making this apology, which is titled Still So Much to Learn, which is true, even in making this apology, there are a lot of issues that are not addressed, and she doesn't have to address every issue all the time, but it must be acknowledged that she does have quite a lot of privilege relative to most trans people. There have been surveys like the Injustice at Every Turn survey, where they talk about this widespread survey they did in the United States, and trans people face almost all of the trans respondents to the survey, for instance, said that they had experienced some harassment or discrimination at work. Like, these are things that people are facing. Trans folks face houselessness at disproportionate rates. They face violence at disproportionate rates.
Brutal violence.
And particularly trans people of color, and particularly trans women of color, face disproportionately all of these things. And those are really, a lot of that is class and race, both areas where she has a lot of privilege. And with her class privilege, she managed to get a lot of the surgery done that she felt would make her happy, and I'm glad that that was true for her. But it's not something that most people have access to.
I'm done with Caitlin.
Yeah,
do you want to? I mean, maybe we might talk about her, because she is a spokesperson for us, and it just, it feels like a double-edged sword, because it's like, mm-hmm. I do want that visibility, you know, like, and that voice out there that has that platform to speak about, all of our issues and all of the violence that happens. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she just doesn't always hit the mark, and I don't know if I should just like be so hard on Caitlin.
I mean, and I'm glad she's living her life, but I also actually wish that she would not keep talking about stuff.
Right, yeah.
Just until she learns things. The title of that piece was Still So Much to Learn. She acknowledges that, but she doesn't seem to be doing the work to seek out that learning herself. This is not the first time she said something or done something where people in in the community, on Twitter, people in various media outlets have commented on it, and she's had to apologize and sort of roll it back a little bit. And she's very visible, for better or worse. Maybe she could take the time to do a little more education or not necessarily speak on things that she doesn't really,
yeah.
I don't know. People ask questions as though she knows the entire history of trans people, which is obviously not the case. Mm. And obviously, of course, she's not going to listen to me being over here like, you know, maybe don't answer the question if you don't know the answer, but she can do whatever she wants. But I still feel the desire to.
I mean, it's really sad because there are other trans women out there like Janet Mock and Laverne Cox that like are very articulate and understand what it mm-hmm. it means to be a trans woman of color.
And they have lived experience as well.
Right,
and they've done a lot of work reading. Like I know Laverne Cox has quoted bell hooks several times.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they both like,
they've
love
done
bell hooks,
that
yeah.
reading and analysis. Sort of married it to their mm-hmm. lived experience and that's where they're coming from. So they have the theory and they have the understanding and history and the lived experience together. That doesn't happen overnight, and for better or worse, Caitlyn Jenner has been in the spotlight since the beginning.
So let's take a little break, and we'll just play some music for you so you can just marinate with those trash talk. This is Goldfrapp, Happiness.
Get to find love, real love, love, love.
Welcome back to Bread and Roses. I'm Nia Nguyen. And
I'm Tessara Dudley.
And we're going to continue our conversation about heteronormativity and transnormativity. So, like, we just had a conversation about Caitlyn Jenner and all the problematic things that she says, and, you know, that comes with her privileges. Now we're going to talk about transmisogyny.
And when we started out, we were talking about passing and sort of passing privilege, which is really at the heart of what Caitlyn said. But talking about this idea of passing, so that there's this pretty arbitrary collection of traits that we assign to each gender. And mm-hmm. when we talk about trans people, there's this idea of passing, being out on the streets and being seen and accepted as one gender or the other, or failing to be seen, which is hard. That leaves out, like, non-binary people, so people who don't identify as men or women kind of don't fit into that whole idea of passing. But the idea that there is a collection of traits and
trans behaviors,
and trans women face a lot of disproportionate violence, which has to do with the way that we privilege masculinity in our society and things like that. But trans misogyny really comes up in the, she said, man in a dress, right? Like mm-hmm. this idea of the man in the dress, which has so many
problems. Something
that
she's trying to stay away from.
So many problems.
But I mean, a lot of trans women, like I know personally, I know a lot of trans women that like try to like steer, like try to be as quote feminine as possible. Mm-hmm. And what does that even mean?
And I understand that it can also be like a self-preservation urge, right? Like mm-hmm. if yeah. you are out in public and you're clocked as trans.
What does clocked mean?
Clocked. Clocked means that you have failed to pass, that someone figures out, right? You know, scare quotes, figures out what you really are, more scare quotes. That you're then, you're in danger, right? Your chances of being in a violent confrontation go up. And we've seen trans women go to prison mm-hmm. because someone picked a fight, right? Like, we talk about the amazing, lovely, wonderful Cece McDonald, who's just a peach.
Who's Cece McDonald?
Cece McDonald.
Can you?
Yeah. Yes. She was, she was with some friends and she had some sewing scissors in her purse, and this guy picked a fight, started his fight, and ended up getting stabbed with the scissors, and she went to prison for quite a while. It was a whole mess. And she has been an anti-prison advocate since that time. She's done a lot of thinking and reading and talked a lot about it. And it's that's one of the dangers, right? So I understand the urge to pass because, you know, I would also really like to not be murdered by somebody on the street.
Yeah.
But this idea that we have to pass instead of addressing systemic, like, it's a societal idea, right? It's not an idea that we just invented out of nowhere. We have to do the thing and blah, 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 because of whatever reason. It's the societal idea that we are, it is still somehow okay for us to be subject to violence if we don't conform. As stated, trans women face by far and away the brunt of that anti-trans violence.
I mean, like, just this year, like, what, like, November 20th, International Trans Day of Trans Transgender Day of Remembrance. Whoa. mm-hmm. Was just on November 20th, and like, we had to have this vigil in remembrance of the many trans women of color that have been murdered this year. Mm-hmm. And just on an international level, that's like 400 something reported deaths. And that's staggering.
And trans people are something like 2% of the population at most. That varies. Numbers are very strange. But it's also really hard to track, obviously. And no one's really looking for those numbers.
Yeah, many things I mean, like, that's why that. I'm, like, it's, saying it's reported very, many times.
Yeah, it's a very small percentage of the population.
Many
and
times,
yet,
yeah.
So much violence.
Many times they're misgendered mm-hmm. when it comes to the reporting aspect of it. So, like, it's so disgusting. But trans misogyny, it could even, like, get to the, it could even get you from, like, internally, mm-hmm. like in the case of Caitlyn Jenner right here. And I personally have been, a person that has, like, internalized my trans misogyny mm-hmm. Through my lifetime. I didn't begin my transition until my late 20s because I was so afraid that I wouldn't pass mm-hmm. And that I would be susceptible to the, like, extra violence already that, you know, mm-hmm. that I had to deal with. And
and I think also it's worth noting that who gets the kudos, right? Or who gets the privilege
cookies.
Or power. Yeah, so there's this sort of lack, I think, of trans men as spokespeople, which gets complained about a lot in the community. But it's interesting to note how and when trans men get the validation, right? They mm-hmm. know they've been there. They've been both genders, right? Scare quotes again. But that trans women are consistently just invalidated and people are really ready and willing to ask invasive questions, to say really horrible, garbagey things.
Like invasive questions as in like a stranger just coming up to yeah. you and just asking, what do you have down there?
Yeah. That's
definitely a little more subtle. Like I've had, you know.
Yeah, no, usually they're more explicit. They say
yeah, definitely
really,
more
really,
explicit, but
really terrible things.
Like who
on the
who
bus,
does
you
this?
Know, or walking down the street or in a classroom sometimes, you know, there are many, many places in our lives we're subject to question and potentially violence. And of course, lots of people outside the community don't even realize that or know anything about it.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about, like, gender non-conforming mm-hmm. ideologies?
Ideologies.
Sorry. Uh-oh.
Well, gender non-conforming. No, I guess. So expand on what you're asking.
Just,
precisely.
You know, like, because you're gender non-conforming.
Mm-hmm.
So, just... share what you think about
gender nonconforming is kind of a weird and tricky term because it gets used a bunch of different ways. Mm. When we're talking about the trans community, there's this sort of tie to binary gender. So in traditional trans narratives, you are one thing or you are the other. You're a man or you're a woman. Trans people are assigned the wrong one, scare quotes, at birth, right? And then if they have the opportunity to have medical intervention, hormones, surgery, et cetera, some people take advantage of that, some don't, some can't, right? But you are going from one side of the binary to the other, and there's this tricky middle ground that a lot of people exist in, where there's genderqueer folks, folks that don't identify with the binary. They identify as outside of the binary, above, below, in between. And so for them, gender is more complex than this binary. And this goes back to passing again, right? Like if you only have the two categories, mm-hmm. Folks get stuck in a lot of strange middle ground when we're talking about these sets of traits and behaviors that are supposed to define who we are. And again, most, like the average person who is cis, who identifies with the gender they were assigned at birth, doesn't even fit into these things. Like not every single cis man in existence loves sports. some cis men like to knit, you know?
Yeah. What does cis mean?
I said, someone who identifies with the gender they were assigned at birth. Woo. Yeah, and so they're very strange, arbitrary gender roles, and they are different from culture to culture. Like, what we define as masculine in the United States is not really have anything to do with what people anywhere else have defined masculinity as, right? Like, these are they're very changeable. Mm-hmm. They're very specific to particular cultures. And they are sort of the, like, bedrock on which everything else is built. So if you don't conform to those expectations of binary genders that are very clear cut, where does that leave you? Well, often a lot of trouble.
Yeah, and I think that's where, like, Caitlin is talking about that, what is it, that role that, like, that you're trying to play, that, like those binaries have created, have forced many people to fit into them so much that they kind of work and maneuver their behaviors and their thoughts and all of that around these binaries and these characteristics and behaviors, that it's like it's kind of insidious. Mm-hmm. Where we have cis women that actually go out and get medical surgeries to look like they pass as well. Like, this doesn't just happen in the trans community. Mm-hmm. I see this outside of, you know, the trans community in the cis world as well, that, like, they're trying to, like, more like shape and morph their body to perfection. And I mean, I think Hollywood is one of the machines that kind of creates this image of perfection for men and women. And I think that's where trans misogyny kind of comes from as well. Like, I mean, Caitlyn Jenner, she is, like, an heiress of you know, like, the Kardashian family, and of course, like, she would get medical surgery. Like, she is around all of these women that are, like, that do the same, right?
Yeah.
So let's take a little break, and we can let you listen to this track.
Maybe. Awkward silence.
You've been acting awful tough lately, smoking a lot of cigarettes lately, but inside it's just a little baby. It's okay to say you got a weak spot. You don't always have to be on top. Better to be hated than loved, loved, loved for what you're not. You're vulnerable, you're vulnerable. You are not a robot, you're lovable, so lovable. But you just try.
Welcome back to Bread and Roses. This is Nia Nguyen, and I've got Tessara with me. Mm-hmm. So I guess we have a caller that called in. His name is Jake, so I guess put him on the line.
Go ahead.
Thanks. Hello?
Hello. Is anyone there?
Hi, can you hear me?
Hi, Jake.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. We can hear you.
Oh, perfect. Sorry. thanks so much for the discussion. It's really great. I'm glad that it's been talked about and people are getting a chance to learn. I think that's the first step.
You're welcome.
My first question, or I guess my only one, was just if you were aware of the recent Title IX exemption request made by Multnomah University here in Portland to discriminate against transgender students that they recently requested of the Department of Education.
I haven't heard anything about that.
Yeah, I read about that recently. This is for the college that's like in Northeast Portland, like on Gleason and 80-something, right?
Right.
I think that is really messed up that they're doing this to, many transgender individuals or gender nonconforming from keeping them out of that university.
Well, I guess my question is, Multnomah is a private Christian university, and they're saying that their reason is because they want to stay consistent with their faith, which, number one, kind of presupposes that trans people don't have faith. And also myself, I consider myself a Christian, but I'm somebody who is, you know, fully open and affirming for people and who, you know, seeks to be an ally for trans people, myself also being cisgender myself. But I'm kind of wondering, like, being a Christian, somebody who's cis, like, from your perspective, like, what's a really great way that I can be an ally to kind of help fight against these sorts of requests of discrimination?
Thank you for being in support of us. That's very sweet.
I think, I would say in terms of any time you want to do work with a community that you're not a part of, education and listening to the voices of folks from that community, Portland being what it is, I'm sure that there are folks protesting and doing work around this. And I'm sure they've also thought about what sorts of things they'd like to see come out of the protests in this situation. I think that reading, listening to what folks are saying, and then just being willing to do the work when you're asked to do that work.
Well, I mean, like, even the fact that you're, like, tuning in on, like, our conversation, and that's doing it already. But yeah, like, more education and also, like, spreading that information out there.
And being willing to, like, interrupt oppressive moments is one of little ones, but that's, it does require, like, some education and some practice. It's very hard and it feels very uncomfortable for a lot of us. Yeah. But when, you know, you're around and someone says something as simple as, you know, like,
or even so, like,
gay,
when you
or whatever, right? Like, you can interrupt those things and you can say things about how you're not okay with that.
And it could even be like really extreme too, that like when you're around and you see like a group of people just like beating on another trans person or like gender nonconforming person, like please stop that from happening. Because like in most cases, like that people don't
bystander effect is strong.
Yeah, bystanders. Like, in LA just recently, there was a woman, she's a trans woman, and she's like much older, but she was like stabbed or shot, and her body was left there for quite a number of hours before somebody actually
That's horrible.
Yeah, it's really horrible. But you know, like, that's where you can totally help and support. Like, when you see that injustice and oppression oppression happening, call it out and stop it.
Yeah,
for sure. Well, thanks so much for just the conversation, and I totally agree. And that's one thing that I'm trying to do, is just to learn and to listen and to put myself into community and solidarity with others who aren't necessarily like myself. But like I said earlier, you know, that's what I believe my Christian faith leads me to do, is to learn to be in solidarity with others who are not like me. So I appreciate the conversation and just the furthering education. It's great, and keep it up. And I hope to keep learning from you.
Thank you so
for your
much.
Call.
Yeah. Merry Christmas. Take care.
All right. You too. Have a good evening.
Thanks. Bye. Well, that was Jake. Thank you so much. That call was really, that was very sweet and surprising because we weren't going to do a call-in show.
We weren't actually going to have people call in.
Yeah.
Not that we don't like y'all.
Yeah, not that we don't like y'all. We're just not prepared for that or doesn't. Mm. Anyway, so we were going to go back to this, the idea of like the myth of the woman. Mm. And I guess... I say myth of the woman because I turn to Simone de Beauvoir's big text of I think the 20th century called The Second Sex, in which she states that one is not born a woman but therefore becomes one. One is born is not born a woman but therefore becomes one, in which she says that like many not just trans people, but like many cis women or girls, they there's a process that they have to go through to become a woman, and it's like this process that like it's like they are always in view or second to the man, and they're always the other. I had a brain fart.
Yeah.
So, Sara, do you want to?
Yeah. Well, weigh in on that? So again, I keep coming back to the idea of passing again, and these categories, right? Mm-hmm. We have these categories that we're all supposed to fall into, and one of the things that I feel like a lot of people can't wrap their brain around is mm-hmm. like the idea that gender is constructed, like it's a thing that is built, not that you or I is like. Not that you or I are like sitting here and we're like, I think this is what is the thing. Yeah. But that like over time, these categories have been built and everyone learns what the categories are and what they mean. Like that's, we learn as children, we see mm-hmm. in the media, we learn from our parents, things like that.
I mean, up until recently, like what is it? Blue represents like male or boys or men. And then pink represents, women, girls, but that wasn't always the case, right? I mean, like in the early 19th century, like pink was a very masculine color. So it's always changing and it's always morphing. So it, when you're saying that like gender is socially constructed, that's a clear indication that like that's it's not a fixed thing.
These are categories. They do change. They have changed. You know, you can go back, think about the fact that, you know, musketeers and so on were all poets, right? Like, we look back at, like, poetry was a manly thing, along with, you know, jumping on a horse and going to murder people.
hasn't changed. Maybe the horse, but...
But that these are things, and now, of course, you know, expressing your emotions and what gets included in the category will change. But we learn, I forgot where I was going. We were talking about normativity. We learn what it is to be one thing or the other. And I think with that in mind, we have to also recognize that those categories can be changed and maybe sometimes should be changed. Mm-hmm. And until folks are willing to do that work, even just among, as I was mentioning before, even just among your friend circle, questioning other people, being willing to interrupt oppressive moments, we're not going to find change. We're not going to reach a point where people don't have to fear for their life just walking down the street. And the categories are, they're real in the sense that they have impacts on our lives, but they're also constructed. Mm-hmm. And that means that we can change them together.
I mean, like, I'm not one of those that individuals that are violent and that would do something like harm, kill, brutalize another individual in the sense that like what trans women of color experience. But I feel like it's fear, right? Fear, fear and ignorance really kind of motivates and like incites that type of violence.
And we also don't recognize the ways that history really plays into it. So when we're talking about gender, it's important to realize that our idea of what a woman is was created specifically in the United States, at least, to apply explicitly only to white women. Like, white women were women, and sorry, everybody else, you're out of luck. But black women have been explicitly excluded from the category of women. And this was part of, bell hooks talks a lot about this in, gosh, which one is it? Ain't I a Woman. In Ain't I a Woman, Black Women and Feminism, bell hooks talks about it. And this idea of the construction of woman to exclude black women, because at the time, black women were enslaved. And they couldn't conform to this idea that was also classist of a woman who, you know, sits back and doesn't do any work, and she has all these like talents, and she may run the house or cook or whatever it is that she may be doing that is taking up her day. That is a nice picture. I'd like to kick back, but black women on the whole weren't included on that on purpose because slavery.
Yeah. And on the other side of that, you know, like Asian women, like they're orientalized to like Edward Said would say, like to the point where like they are othered, but then also they are orientalized to and fetishized for their traits, but they're not really seen as people, like like real women either. Just fetishes. Yeah, so there's that intersection with race, like, you know, like the idea that like the woman is only that image of the woman is only applied to white women or white passing women.
And class plays a piece in that as well, right?
Oh, yeah, like, absolutely. Like all of those intersections, they all play in class with each other. Yeah.
Women, I can guarantee that no one listening to this has never met a woman who wears pants. I feel pretty safe saying that out loud. but trans women are encouraged or have been encouraged in the past to wear dresses exclusively as part of their attempt to be real, scare quotes, women. Only wear dresses, wear makeup, learn how to do all of these things, wear heels, right? I know plenty of women, cis and trans, who don't like wearing dresses or skirts, and they wear pants, right? And the idea of a dress as something that is like the epitome of womanhood, women in the late 1800s working in mines were wearing skirts. They hiked them up. They had pants underneath because they were working in a mine, right? Yeah. Like, they're not, they don't have time to, you know, like buff up their nails. They're out there working,
coughing it up,
getting food on the table for their kids, right? Like, there's so many ways that we've constructed gender, and we don't think about the ways that those traits are really exclusive, and they were created to be really exclusive.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that like I did when I was like when I first transitioned was that like I wore all these dresses, and that was like I was getting all of these trans misogynistic like dialogue and like conversations from you know, people I knew, but also like people that I didn't know, that like, oh, you look so much prettier if you were in a dress, or sorry.
You can't see it. I'm making a face.
Yeah.
It's not an approving
face. Tesoro's making a face. Yeah, I know. Like, or like, you know, anyways, all of that. And it really, like, it dug, like, you know, dug under my skin. And I really did those things where, like, I put on high heels and, like, I go out and, I'm like, oh, I'm a woman.
Yeah. And not every trans person has, like, depression or anxiety, for sure. But for those folks who have that in their background, this is something like people on the street commenting on whether you pass or not day in and day out, your family trying to be supportive and saying things that like hurt. or make you self-conscious. Like, those things have an impact every day. It's really exhausting to try and get out of bed knowing that you could be subject to danger, and knowing that people will feel they have the right to walk up and ask you what genitalia you have, that people feel they have the right to comment on your makeup and whether it's doing whatever it's supposed to be doing in that moment, right?
Like, or try to pull your hair and say, oh, I'm sorry, that's real.
Yeah. All of that,
like,
right?
All, like, of those things, like, as if, like, I'm playing a role, mm-hmm, for you.
And feeling entitled to your body and your time.
Right, exactly.
Strangers who you don't know from Adam. Yeah.
So we're about 4 minutes away from the hour, and I say that we have to end our conversation right here, but it's been quite a pleasure to have you, Tessara, with me.
Same.
Yes. Thank you for tuning in to Bread and Roses, Feminist Radio and Public Affairs. I'm Nia Nguyen, and thanks to our engineer, Abani, who is... thank you, Tessara.
Yeah, thank you.
Have a good night.
Marching at the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses. Marching, so many women dead. We cry through our city, their ancient call for bread. Our stomachs are empty, but our hearts are hungry too. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Welcome to your Friday. It's Hemi Blue Rhino here. You're listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM, KBOO Portland, and Hard Knock Radio coming up at 7 o'clock. Thank you for tuning in to the wonderful Bread and Roses show, heard every Friday right here from 6 to 7. So coming up next, stay tuned for the Bread and Roses. What am I saying? Hard Knock Radio's next, actually. And that's about it. Here we go.
KBOO is proud to host the entire series of the podcast, The Spirit of the Forest, an audio drama, dark comedy, and semi-musical outsider art program. It's created by independent producer Dan Krall from Corvallis, and the program reflects upon the sadness, the absurdity, and normalcy of modern life. Listen to The Spirit of the Forest on demand at kboo.fm/thespiritoftheforest.
Music and mayhem via downtempo, hip-hop, rap, drum and bass, breakbeats, and everything else except the kitchen. The Soundbox focuses on local hip-hop noise, abstract originators, classic hits, respecting the quiet storm, and toasting the original. Your hosts are Dina B and PDX Biologic. Tune in to Soundbox every Saturday from 10 p.m. to midnight here on KBOO Portland.
This is M1 from Dead Prez.
Hey, what's up? This is Boots from The Coup.
Nah, I mean, telling you to stay tuned to Hard Knock Radio.
Keep it locked.
On the move, this is Pam Africa on Hard Knock Radio, the station of resistance. Down with this rotten-ass system.
Yo, check this out. Hard Knock Radio coming at you, bringing the noise. This is Chuck D, Public Enemy number one. News, views, and hip-hop.
Peace and love. This is Azeem. You're listening to Hard Knock Radio. Real radio. from the concrete up all the way to the sun. Keep shining, y'all. One love.
What's up, folks? This is your girl Femi representing the whole Bay Area. I'm here on Hard Knock Radio, news, views, and hip-hop. Stay tuned.